time is 5 o'clock. Welcome, everybody, to this our very first meeting for 2000. I didn't hear any mishap or anything concerning our members. I hope everybody is coming back rejuvenated. We did have a break and we did have time with our families. As we usually do, to start with our personalia, if we have anything to share, positive or negative. May Mash Sangwa. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you for setting on New Year's Eve my beautiful shoes of good food and station to find the intention was to come and maybe see what because 3 days down the line. Unfortunately, I had a whistle at 2 o'clock in the morning, and in front of my house is the level post. And I hear it so, I left him on the other side, and immediately called the police and responded to me, and they ran away. But then, on the same week on Friday, they seven men got into the house in my street and killed a woman, a lady, putting in the house of two, working for some time. So the daughter witnessed the mother's reporter. It was very difficult.
Yes. Sorry to hear that. Thanks ever so much then for sharing those. We'll go give over now to the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and honorable members, and good morning to you all. Can we return the compliments also of the season? Of course, for us in the education department, it's a bit of an old season already. We've been going at it throughout December and January, and I can't say that some of our officials had any time with their families over this period while they were busy working on the examination. Can I just introduce my team, Ms. Penny Vingerfelt, DDG, who's responsible for further education and training, including the matric exams, and Ms. Vivian Carlson, who's DDG in the DG's office in the department. Chair, it's a pleasure, I think, to be able to share with you the technical report on the National Senior Certificate results for 2008. Of course, many of these have been in the public domain in different ways, but there are particular emphases I think we'd like to draw to your attention because I think some of them do deserve some political consideration by public representatives like yourselves. There is a presentation, but there's a hard copy version as well at the back if others prefer. Chair, the first point we've been asked to make is that we need to appreciate that examinations, while they happen, of course, at a particular time in the year, the examination cycle is certainly not a one-off event. And in fact, this picture will demonstrate that it's something that goes on throughout the year. In fact, let me say that even the cleanup work that we're doing at the moment around the 2008 results is starting, it hasn't yet done so, but it's starting to impact on our preparations and planning even for the exams at the end of this year. So clearly it's something we need to do. You will see that following at the top left the results by the release of results by the minister and the certification process, we then start with the whole cycle once again with the registration of centres, enrolling the learners, setting the question papers, getting them moderated in different ways, of course the exam being written, marked, capturing, and all the way around to the standardization, the moderation, etc., and the final declaration by Umalusi before we come back to a release of the results again. So just to appreciate that there is that continuing cycle around the matric exams in particular. Just a bit of a record of the milestones. The examinations, you'd recall, started a month later this year, so they only started on the 5th of November. They were completed on the 4th of December, and I'm very pleased to say that really there were no leaks or problems, and you understand the risk that we were facing in this regard with the national exam now. If a paper had leaked in Limpopo, it would have jeopardized the entire national exam, and including down here in the Western Cape, we would have had to replace all the papers. Fortunately, and through our systems, it didn't happen, and I think all involved in these deserve some credit for that. A week later, we had finished the marking by the 12th of December, and then we went into the standardization process for 3 or 4 days with Umalusi. And let me just remind the members of the House that this is not a closed process. There have been all sorts of comments and allegations around the standardization process. I must remind the House that not only do higher education sit in on that process, because they obviously have a huge interest in the standards that we're putting out there, but even the teacher unions are present in that standardization process, just to make sure that indeed there is no manipulation of marks in any undue sense. That then led on the 23rd of December to the statement by Umalusi, and I'll come back to that statement itself, and you'll see between the 23rd of December and the 30th of December was when our officials were then working flat out. So when I say there was no time with families, literally there was no time with families. They spent that week ensuring that the schools got their results on the 30th of December as we promised, and of course the minister made the public statement to the media and public on the 30th of December. I should say here that this does put enormous pressure on the system overall, and we need to find a way to try and ensure that this process can be managed well in that very brief time available. The National Curriculum Statement, of course, this is the first time we were writing a matric exam based on the new National Curriculum Statement. This statement, of course, provides for 29 subjects now instead of the 100 plus that we used to have. Undoubtedly, and I think some recent articles have confirmed that it is a modern curriculum, it's been updated, it's certainly a more demanding version of some of the previous subject statements that we had. Some of them certainly have the same names, you will see, but others have indeed changed to reflect both change in content, but also to pick up on some international trends around these areas. All of these subjects have been infused with the values of the Constitution, particularly a human rights approach in these subjects as well, and all subjects demand extensive reading and extended writing. That is certainly a core skill that all are required to have. The National Senior Certificate itself, we emphasize, is a three-year program. Many people, I think, have this understanding that it's just about grade 12. Of course, it's not. That program starts in grade 10. After you've finished your grade 9 general education program, you get into a three-year program, grade 10, 11, and 12. And one of the bits of evidence we've seen is that it's too late to start intervening in grade 12. You've got to get things moving from grade 10, ensure that everything is working from then. Grade 12 in the end is probably too late to do anything substantial at that stage. In terms of the National Senior Certificate, all candidates have to offer 7 subjects. That includes your 2 languages, of which one of them, of course, has to be your home language. You then have a choice of either mathematics or mathematical literacy, and we'll reflect on those choices later on. And, of course, the compulsory life orientation program now, which includes the areas of career guidance and various others. And then you have a choice of 3 other subjects from the 20-odd other offerings in the National Curriculum Statement. People make their selections from those. In order to achieve a National Senior Certificate, you have to pass a minimum of 3 subjects at a 40% level and another 3 subjects at a 30% level. Please understand, these are minima. These are not targets. These are not goals by any manner of means. This is the minimum you have to achieve. Clearly, most have targeted much higher than that. And of these marks, 25% is a school-based assessment, and 75% is drawn from the external matric examination. That's the way it's constructed. The entire process, and I stress the entire process, is quality assured by Umalusi. That includes, from the very beginning, the moderation of the papers themselves. We get panels of examiners now who set the exam papers. Umalusi, in the first instance, looks at those and ensures that they are of the right standard. Umalusi observes the writing process as well and ensures that proper invigilation and other security aspects are attended to in the writing of the exam. They then monitor very closely the marking process and ensure that things don't go amiss there, and some of the allegations, I think, around what people have said happens there, I think Umalusi would strongly dismiss those. And then, of course, in particular, Umalusi does play a role in the standardization. But Umalusi was able to declare on the 23rd of December that the 2008 National Senior Civil Examinations were conducted in a manner that renders them fair, valid, and reliable. And I have to say, Chair, this is a body of professionals. This is not a department body at all. This is a group of professionals with a variety of interests and stakeholders, and I think we do need to accept the credibility of the members of the Umalusi Council who have indeed made this declaration. I think if anyone suggests otherwise, they should take it up with Umalusi. The class of 2008, you'll recall, have had a rather interesting school career. Some have said they actually started off with a new curriculum. In fact, they didn't. They only commenced it in grade 3, but from grade 3 to 9, this class of 2008 has been offered curriculum 2005, and then, of course, once they got into grade 10, they have followed the national curriculum statement over the last 3 years. Very important point. We've got a record number of learners. In 2003, we had something about 150,000 less learners writing matric than we have in 2008. So in a mere 5 years, there's 150,000 more writing matric, and in fact, over the last year alone, some 28,000 more have completed 12 years of schooling, have indeed stayed and written their final matric exam. So suggestion that learners are dropping out in droves, I think, is contradicted by this continuing growth in numbers of people completing their 12 years and their matrics. This year was a pretty special year because of the change in curriculum. We had no repeaters in the system. Anyone who had failed grade 12 previously went through the second chance program. So everyone in the grade 12 class this year was in fact doing their matric for the first time, and we didn't therefore have any part-time learners either. These were all full-time learners. The part-timers would be doing a supplementary exam, second chance exam later in the year. Interesting and deserving, I think, of some analysis, we continue to have more female than male candidates. There are more girls staying through until the end of matric than boys, and it is a continuing matter of concern for us and something we need to continue to address. Just before we get to the results, I think it is important that we understand the kind of interventions that were made during 2008 in order to get the kind of results that we're looking at. The overarching one, of course, was a national strategy for learner attainment, and I'll talk a little bit about that. There were a number of systemic interventions. The private sector have supported us very nicely and intervened in different ways. We had some interventions around the curriculum itself, and then a range of interventions around assessment. If I can just briefly reflect on each of those, the systemic interventions, broadly, we have seen increased funding for the education system. We know that. We're seeing more resources, teachers, books, etc., going into the system. That clearly has made a difference. We have insured more teachers to try and reduce the teacher-learner ratio. We're seeing the evidence of that. We've continued to recruit teachers both internally in the country and externally, a number of foreign teachers coming into our system, some of whom certainly have made a big difference in their schools. The infrastructure, you will see in our reports the number of classrooms, facilities, laboratories, etc. that have been provided. All of these things make a difference. More learning materials, particularly textbooks, and then our particular focus in the areas of Kids Up, mostly in the primary schools, and the Dinaledi projects in the secondary schools. You'll see the reports there about the impact of some of these interventions. On assessment itself, we've done a lot of work here. And one of them is that since 2006, we have been continuing to train our examining panels. As I say, historically we used to have one examiner. Now we have an examination panel who sets the exam. These have been appointed for a sustained period, and they've been trained in terms of ensuring that the papers are at the proper standard and format. We produced, of course, all the examination exemplars for grade 10 in 2006. So from grade 10, these learners were starting to see what a matric exam would look like and the kind of things and standards that would be required. So they've been prepared over an extended period. That was continued in 2007 when these learners were in grade 11. They continued to get these exemplars. And at the end of 2007, we ran a full-scale examination for these grade 11s. So there were no surprises when they came to matric. They knew what this thing was about and how it was going to happen. And, of course, in 2008 itself, we flooded the grade 12s with a whole set of these examination exemplars. And everyone has said to us, one of the best interventions that we have initiated. It certainly has helped both teachers, interestingly, but the learners as well, undoubtedly. Further interventions around the assessment, we have invited some international assessment authorities to comment on the grade 12 exam exemplars, and these were some very reputable bodies, the Scottish Qualifications Authority, New South Wales and Australia, and Kenya it was, I think, that all looked at our exam exemplars and have all said these are certainly of a high standard. We can give you the report if you want, but it's quite clear they thought highly of them. We've continued to make sure that the language within them is simple and able to be understood even by someone who is not necessarily writing in their home language. The markers, we've continued to focus on who we select to mark and the training of markers. Some provinces, for example, have refused to allow anyone to mark who didn't get, I think, at least 50 or 60% in their own teaching of the subject. So if you're not a good teacher yourself, you're certainly not going to be invited to come and get involved in the marking process. So that was there. Discussions around the marking memos to ensure consistency. The security issue in the provinces, as I say, I think has been well addressed. And we continue to monitor, as do Omalusi and various other bodies as well. So broadly around the assessment, we've done a lot of work, and I think we've seen some of the results of that. Around the curriculum, we've also done a lot of work in training both teachers and subject advisors, particularly at the secondary level. We've increased the spending and distribution of textbooks. I think we can confidently say that virtually every matric did have a full set of textbooks available to them. We're ensuring now that from grade 10 that should be happening, and I'm pleased to say that at the moment it does look like every grade 10 will have their full set of 7 textbooks. That has made an enormous difference to them. Again, as I say, the exam and the assessment exemplars that have been provided. And then many provinces have, of course, laid on additional tuition, both during school hours, but more importantly, evenings, Saturdays, Sundays even. That sort of thing has certainly been happening, and there I think we do need to compliment all the teachers who have, in many senses on a voluntary basis, made this contribution towards improvements. The private sector has helped us. They have provided funding for particular initiatives, particularly around math, science, and the Dinnerlady schools. We've been able, I think, to more clearly direct them now in terms of where that funding and support goes. We've got a framework now for the adoption of schools that helps the private sector to get involved in a constructive way, and many have been adopted by private sector companies. It has to be something that we welcome. Let me turn then, Chair, saying that's what we did in order to get to the matric exams. Let's see how the matric exams themselves went. This table, I think, is the most important. It gives an overall sense of what happened in that exam. Chair, if you start from the bottom and you see 533,561 candidates altogether wrote the examination, and then working upwards, a large number, 142,000 of them, qualified for a supplementary exam. Now, perhaps I need to explain a little bit on this one, Chair, because it is qualitatively different from previous years. In previous years, you could actually pass as few as 4 subjects out of your total of 6, but provided your overall aggregate was high enough, so provided you did well enough in those 4 subjects, you could fail your other 2, but provided your aggregate was high enough, you could still get a national matric certificate. That was okay. The provisions now require you to, in fact, pass all 6 subjects. You cannot fail not one of them. The evidence is that a number of students, and that's why this number is so large, a number of students failed either one or two subjects by sometimes as little 3, 4, 5 marks. So, you know, instead of getting the 40%, they might have got 36, 37% and on one subject, and because of that, they have failed their entire matric. Historically, they would have passed, no doubt. But now, with the much stricter regulations, you have to pass all six. Those students, in fact, have failed, but obviously, having failed by that smaller margin, they would then have qualified for a supplementary exam. So the supplementaries have actually become a very critical part of the overall exam process. Historically, supplementaries were probably far more about people wanting to improve their results rather than having actually failed and wanting now to pass. It was about upgrading certain subjects. So these 142,000 are now being permitted to write either one or two subjects, a maximum of two subjects, in which they had failed by a fairly small amount. Our projection, given the assessment there, that many of them have missed this one or two subjects by only a few marks, that a high percentage of this 142,000 should be able to complete their exam, complete their subject, pass them. And, of course, if we can just get even half of those 142,000 through, suddenly the whole equation changes very dramatically, and we would have to see in March, after these supplementaries had been written, how, in fact, the class of 2008 performed overall, including those who had qualified for a supplementary. But it is important, I think, that people do understand that supplementaries take on a very different nature now. Some have said it's almost like a university where someone says, how did you do? And you say, I passed two and I got two supplementaries. Not I passed two and I failed two. I passed two, I got two subs, kind of thing. It's a little bit similar now in the matric exam, and it is important that these supplementaries are properly supported now. And as I say, we hope that all of them would have registered for the supplementaries, and certainly, as I say, hope that a large percentage of them indeed will pass. So it is important to see that. Of the 533,000 plus, only 60,000 altogether did not achieve at all. So in fact, the failures were the 60,000, the 11.25%. So in a sense, you can say that some 88% either passed or got a supplementary. Only 11.25% did not achieve altogether. Clearly, they must return to school and repeat the year or whatever. Of those who did achieve, 102,000 or 19.2% achieved at a level that just gives them an ordinary pass, what is known now as a higher certificate. 23% of them, 124,000, achieved at the level that qualifies them for entry to a diploma. Broadly, admission into one of the University of Technology kind of institutions or elsewhere, but they certainly would be encouraged to continue their studies. They have achieved at that level. And I think very importantly, and something we are proud of indeed, 107,000 of them did achieve at the level of a bachelor's that qualifies them for entry into a bachelor's degree at university. That is 20.2% from a previous figure of below 18%. We've seen a large increase at the top end of the number of students who have in fact got a pass that qualifies them for higher education. So that shares the overall breakdown of the results. Let's see if we can unpack it in a little bit more detail. Firstly, just to look at the number of candidates who wrote and passed per province, you will see that the big provinces, of course, KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo, they're the figures there. Eastern Cape is our big disappointment, and we'll come through to those at a later stage. But I think the figures there are probably self-explanatory. Of course, you can see Gauteng and Western Cape, the red bar, much closer to the top of the green bar. That's indicating good performance. The national, of course, the 62.5%. But again, we will wait, and that figure, of course, will be adjusted based on the supplementary results as well. So that's just a figure per province, and we can give you more detail if you want. The achievement rate per province, you will see the line across is the national average of 62.5%. Five of the provinces achieved above that national average, and that's very encouraging, including, of course, provinces like Northwest, although some don't like to admit it, is indeed a very rural and underdeveloped province. The extraordinary work, I think, that they did in supporting learners and teachers has generated the success they've found, 68% overall pass rate. Free State, I think, likewise, also a province with a large rural population, a lot of smaller schools that they had. They have taken enormous steps, and I believe their figure of 71.8% is something they can be very proud of. KwaZulu-Natal, fairly near the average, and a bit more effort I think we can get there. Limpopo, Mpumalanga, a little bit disappointing, and we will be supporting them. And, of course, Eastern Cape, we know the difficulties there, and we will be talking about supporting them in different ways. The actual numbers achieved per province, I think, will follow that kind of pattern. Again, you will see KwaZulu-Natal, the largest contributor towards our overall human resource development in the country, 78,000 of them passed. Gauteng close behind with 70,000, and the other provinces following on behind that. In terms of the national figures, this again is just a graphical form of that first table. The total erode, 533,000. The not achieved, 199, of course, includes the 140,000 who have qualified for supplementaries, as well as the 60,000 who didn't pass, and then the others who have qualified at different levels, either for the ordinary certificate, admission to higher education diploma programs, or admission to higher education bachelor's programs. Those are the numbers. Chair, of course, our job now is to try and ensure that where we did not see due performance, we intervene. And one of the bases for analysis there is to look at the percentage of schools who got different levels of passes here. Chair, regrettably, we have got some schools who continue to get exactly 0% in the matric results. Now, we have asked provinces to look very closely at these schools, and I'm glad to say that at the meeting of MECs last week, it was agreed by a number of the provinces that some of these schools would indeed have their grade 10, 11, 12 taken away. They would simply be schools that would operate up until grade 9, and then the matriculants would have to transfer to another school, which was clearly delivering a bit better. So we are addressing that 0.6% of schools who landed up with that kind of figure. Clearly, we can't be happy with the next category either, the 0 to 20%. There's still 8.7% of schools down in that category. We've got to work with them very strongly. Another nearly 20% are still sitting below 40%, and another 20%, as it were, between 40 and 60%. Chair, we've continued to lift the bar in this regard, and at the moment, our definition of an underperforming school is, in fact, any school that got less broadly than the national average. We can take it any school that got less than 60%. That, to us now, is an underperforming school, and we will be working with all these underperforming schools. They're relatively small in number, but we will have to work with the provinces to ensure that these schools improve their results. One of the concerns we've had is that a number of schools who were identified previously as underperforming, they came up very nicely in 2007, and then it appears that we kind of let go of them and said, okay, you're right now, you can manage, and sadly some of them have actually regressed back into that underperforming category again. So we do need to be sure that when we do intervene, that we intervene in a way that leaves behind the kind of legacy that will ensure they continue. But up at the top end of the scale, Chair, some 20% of schools with a 60 to 80% pass rate, 28% of schools, these have to be the stars in the system, and let's be quite clear, these are not just our former Model C schools. There are many schools in this category who are in rural areas or in townships where ultimately it's the leadership of the principal, it's the dedication of the teachers, it's the support of the parents that has seen this kind of result. So nearly 30% of our schools, Chair, in that category of 80 to 100%, I think all credit to them, and we do need to recognize their good work. And in fact, 8% of our schools, Chair, got exactly 100% pass. Now, these really, I do think, are schools that have done extraordinarily well, given the difficulties of this particular examination. Chair, if we look at the pass distribution, also we'll see the same kind of figure here. These were the schools, this is just the numerical part, and again you'll see 500 odd schools with exactly 0%, these schools have to be addressed. Another 500 odd in the 0 to 20, more than that in the 20 to 40, and a similar number in the 40 to 60. All of those schools, Chair, up until 60%, are the ones that we would be focusing on during the course of this year, trying to see what went wrong there, trying to see what is best to address it. Sometimes it will be about trying to keep the school and develop it, but as I say, in some instances, it must be the case that these schools should not be designated as exam centres and should not be offering the FET curriculum into schools. 44 schools with exactly 100%. Chair, it would be lovely if members of this committee were able to go and see some of those schools, and particularly those who have achieved this against perhaps difficult odds, and really to encourage them in any way possible, and perhaps to go beyond. If there are any sort of rewards we can bring to these schools, I think the Minister has on more than one occasion said one of the things we need to do more and more is to reward success. Good that we pay attention to underperforming schools, but let's also recognize good quality when we see it, and let's ensure that that kind of success is indeed rewarded in a proper way. In terms of your higher level passes, your numbers qualifying for bachelor's degree per province, the national total 107,000, KwaZulu contributing about a quarter of those, Gauteng the other quarter, and the rest of the provinces making up the other 50,000 or so of those higher grade passes. Very encouraging, I'm sure, for KwaZulu-Natal to have that many students who are now qualifying for higher education, 25,000 odd, and Gauteng 28,000 odd. Qualified for the percentage there, you'll see the national percentage, 20%. Again, predictably, five provinces slightly above it, four slightly below it, but particularly Limpopo in the Eastern Cape. Limpopo a bit unfortunate because historically they've had quite a good record of producing students with exemptions. Somehow I think they have fallen behind during the course of this year. And then just turn to some of the individual subject results. As I say, there are 29 subjects, but even beyond that, one subject is language, and that's got about 30 different variations itself, so I'm not going to go through them all, but I think an overview is important, and the first picture is just to get a sense of the number of candidates who wrote the selected subjects. There are others with very small enrollment, but just to have a look first, life orientation, of course, the bigger one, that is compulsory. Everyone does it, so understandably there's a full set there. English, first additional language, very popular subject, 464,000. The choice, remember, was between maths and maths literacy. So if you look at the maths column, you're looking at about 298,000 learners. If you look just one to the right, the maths literacy column, 263,000 learners. So it was almost about 50-50 in terms of learners who were choosing maths as opposed to maths literacy. Slightly more choosing maths than maths literacy, but that is something that will work itself out over time. One of the things we did pick up is that a number of students, certainly in excess of 10,000, did maths literacy, but in fact got a distinction in it. So they were up in the very top level of maths literacy. Now again, over time, we would be learning. Those sort of students should, I would assume, have rather been doing maths. They clearly are very capable. They should probably have been doing maths and might have got a good result there. So that's the sort of thing that schools will be learning over time, is trying to select who should go this way, who should go that way. Life sciences, a very popular one, the old subject called biology, 297,000 learners doing that. And then we go down the ladder, physical science, 218, still a very popular subject. You know, some people have this impression that our learners are lazy and do not want to choose hard subjects. Explain then why more are doing maths than maths literacy. Explain why 218,000 of them have chosen to do physical science, which is not a compulsory subject. Learners, I don't believe, are scared of a bit of effort and challenge in these subjects. Geography, 213,000, business studies, 204, accounting, 176, economics, English home language, history, agricultural science, 85,000 doing agricultural science. We talk about the rural development strategy. Clearly agricultural science is a huge contributor to that. 85,000 students doing that is encouraging, although there is a problem with the results I'll reflect on in a moment. Afrikaans first additional language, Afrikaans home language, and as I say, there are some of the others as well. But that just gives you a sense of which are the popular subjects, and as I say, this notion that students are scared of hard work certainly should be dispelled. However, if we look at the achievement rate for those same subjects, Chair, you will see a pattern developing there very strongly. In most of the subjects, we were well over the 60% level. Even for things like accounting, that first column, we were still up at 61%. But if you look, for example, at our languages on the right, Afrikaans, 99, Afrikaans first additional, English, English first additional, etc., all up in the 90s, and particularly if you look at your indigenous languages, they were even higher, up in the 95, 96, 99% even. So certainly there's no issue with the languages largely. I think on many of the other subjects, like geography, an 80% pass rate, history, 68, a little bit lower than we would have liked, economics, 77, those sort of subjects are fine, Chair, and overall, if those could have been the majority, I think we would have seen a much better result. You will see there the three problem areas, Chair. One is agricultural science, 52%. Now, as I say, encouraging that so many students did it, but of course disappointing that so many of them failed to pass. I think we recognize there is a structural problem here. Many of these students were doing agricultural science in circumstances that were just not conducive to proper study of the subject. The agricultural colleges, agricultural schools rather, are not always equipped at the level that they should be. They are expensive, of course. They require fairly large grounds. They require stock, sheep, cows, whatever it is, as well as agricultural implements. And we will be working with the provinces now to investigate the situation in our agricultural schools, trying to see what is lacking in those instances, and perhaps a little bit like we did with our FET colleges, we need to talk about a recapitalization of these institutions to make sure that they can deliver the kind of quality programs that they should be doing to those 80,000 odd students. The other two subjects you will see, Chair, in the middle of the table stand out very clearly. Maths, of course, we know it's a difficult subject. 45% passed, and that's a good sign, but of course that had the effect, because it's one of the compulsory subjects, of bringing down the overall pass rate, and that has to be an area that continues to remain our focus. It has been over the past while, and you'll see some very encouraging results out of our dinner lady schools on the maths in particular, but we've got to continue to work at bringing that pass rate up. The other disappointment is just next to it, the physical science. The 54% sounds good enough, but Chair, there's no reason that shouldn't be up in the 70s as well. I think in some instances schools perhaps gave a lot more attention to the maths concern and ensured that the best teachers were in the maths classes. Unfortunately, very often maths and physical science tend to go together, and that in some cases meant a neglect of the physical science program. And I think during the course of this year, our focus undoubtedly is going to be on the agricultural science, on mathematics, and on the physical science. Maths literacy, if you look on the right-hand side of the column, up at 78%, Chair, very encouraging. And let us remind ourselves, this is not an easy form of maths. The universities themselves have said, there's no question this is a difficult subject. The difference is, it's not the maths that is difficult, it's the application that is difficult in this case. And that pass rate in maths literacy, I have to say, is encouraging. Just to recognize, Chair, that some 200,000 students passed maths literacy. That is probably 200,000 students who would never, ever have done maths before at school. They would have avoided it. Now they've had to do either maths or maths literacy. They've done maths literacy. 200,000 of them have passed. They are entering, even if they're going straight into the workplace, they are entering the workplace with a pretty solid grounding in terms of numeracy. There can be no question that that has to be good for the country overall and certainly for the productive part of the economy. Chair, interesting gender breakdowns as well. You heard earlier that we had more females than males competing. In fact, it's awkward to say that in most cases the females have done far better than the boys in almost all subjects. And some of them, I have to say, are rather dramatic. Agricultural science, perhaps not too surprisingly, is one area where the boys have done a bit better. They've held their own in geography, history, and maths and physical science. But in many of the other subjects, including the languages, in fact, the females have done far better than the boys. And ironically, because, of course, in the international terrain, everyone just talks about girls' education. It's quite clear that we also have to pay attention to boys' education and try and ensure that our boys are indeed doing as well, at least as the girls. And here, then we get into the individual subjects, and I don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time on them. I've given the overall national figures. This was perhaps more beneficial to the individual provinces. So you'll just see some of the figures here. Accounting is covered, agricultural science. Again, we've spoken about the disappointments in that one. Life sciences, business studies. I really don't think I should spend time on these, Chair. Life orientation, you'll see the 96 there. Interesting breakdown of the languages here. People, candidates who wrote their home language in the first additional languages. Afrikaans, see that. These are the number who passed Afrikaans in the yellow, and the red is achieved at the higher level. And it goes right across the board. Indibele, first additional language, is the only one that almost doesn't feature on the graph, so no offense to Indibele speakers, that's the choice of our learners. But as I said, in terms of languages, there's no doubt. Overall, the pass rate is really as good as we would hope in most of these areas. English and Afrikaans, generally not being home languages, can be a bit of a difficulty, but all the rest certainly good performance on. Technical subjects, agricultural technology, these are just numbers who wrote. CAT is your computer-aided application technology, CNST, civil technology, all right, we can go through them, civil technology, electrical technology, GRDS. Graphic design, GRDS, hospitality, information technology, and mechanical technology, and tourism. Very encouraging, the tourism chair, 68,000 who wrote that subject in anticipation of 2010. I'm sure we'd all appreciate those learners coming out. But I think all of these have seen a growth in the numbers of people who are offering, again, what are not easy subjects. Many of these technology ones, of course, are difficult. The computer applications one is clearly a technical one. These are encouraging that students are selecting these subjects. These are the pass rates, and again, most of them quite satisfactory, up in the 80s, up in the 60s generally, and that bodes well for the country, I'm sure. Centers, I think, that's just a picture, the 3,070 schools who got below 60%. You'll see a large number of them in KwaZulu-Natal, in Limpopo, in the Eastern Cape. Those provinces we have to continue to work with to reduce those number of schools. Here's the graphic breakdown of those that perform below 60%. And you will see, Chair, in some cases, as I said earlier, that in fact there were less than 2,000. The numbers actually grown in certain provinces, and those we do need to pay attention to. Free State, part of the reason they got good results, I think, is because they've been able to reduce the number of schools that are performing below 60%. So that helps us to target these interventions. This I've given before, the 24 schools who got naught in the overall assessment, 475 below 20, 1227 between 20 and 40, and 1344 below 60. So all of those will have to be attended to. Again, just the categories by province, and you can see that for yourself. That makes up the 1344 altogether. Interestingly, in terms of the quintiles, the poverty ranking of schools, I don't think any of us should be surprised at a correlation between the extent of poverty and the overall achievement levels. It is true to say that our quintile 1 schools performed at the lowest level, 50.1%. It improved in quintile 2 to 53, quintile 3, 59, quintile 4, 67, and quintile 4, 84, quintile 5, 84. This, of course, confirms the fact that many of our schools are under-resourced, certainly, and that these resources do impact on achievement. But I think some of the analysts have looked at this, Chair, and said that they would have anticipated the graph to be much, much steeper. That, in fact, given the inequalities we have in society, one might have expected quintile 5 to be up in the 90s and quintile 1 to be down in the 20s. the fact they've said, and this included some international analysts, the fact they've said that this is a relatively gentle curve is certainly much better than many, including developed countries, who see a much greater correlation between the extent of poverty and achievement. So I think in many senses our schools are starting to overcome those social inequalities, but again, we need to continue to ensure that all schools have the resources that enable them to get up to the top level. Some of the quintile fives, I think, are going to need attention as well. The fact that the overall percentage rate for quintile fives was just below 85%, I think that should be probably at least 10% higher. These, of course, are our best schools in terms of resources, in terms of teaching staff, etc. I think we would want to push them as well to lift their level of performance as well. But it's an interesting figure that I think deserves attention. Again, the quintiles, you look at quintile 1, it had the majority of schools who got under 60%, just over 1,000 of them. Quintile 2, 590. Quintile 3, a bit disappointing that they in fact have more under 60%ers than quintile 2. These are slightly richer schools. They should certainly be lower than your quintile 2 figure, so some of them are going to have to pay some attention, I think. Quintile 4, there were 290, and still at quintile 5, we had 168 schools who got under 60%. Now, a quintile 5 school really has no excuse for performing below 60%, and really, I think, strict attention needs to be paid to these 168, and these might be the schools that are going to be seeing changes in leadership, etc. Again, just a further breakdown of that, your quintile ones, that makes up the 1,000 schools under 60, etc., and similarly for each of the different quintiles. And that, I think, concludes the presentation. Perhaps, Chair, I should just make one little comment that is probably on everyone's mind, is about, of course, the outstanding results. The Minister had to indicate that there were approximately 50,000 results outstanding at December the 30th when this was announced. Chair, it's an interesting phenomena and one, of course, that we will be focusing on during the course of this year. But let me just say that the Minister has instituted an investigation into this matter to try and discover why these students' results were not processed by the time all the others were. And I think, Chair, until that investigation has been concluded and reported to the Minister, it would probably be premature of me to indicate or speculate on any reasons why it might have happened. But, Chair, I am pleased to advise that at this stage, I think we have had reports from all the provinces that 8 of the 9 provinces have indeed concluded all the results that they can. There are some results still outstanding of students who have genuine irregularities, who might have either been suspected of cheating or something, or perhaps where for some reason the subjects they registered for were not the ones they wrote, those kind of difficulties. But in the 8 of the 9 provinces, certainly that process has been concluded with all those that can be concluded, and our latest information is that Mpumalanga has slightly under 1,000 now. They're working on day and night at the moment, and certainly we would expect them to conclude those results in the next short while and ensure that every learner has their results. With that, Chair, let me pause and obviously available for questions. Thanks very much.
Thank you ever so much. Let me start with that broad question, starting with the last one. The outstanding results, the figures were going up and down. There was even a report to the effect that some students did not even write. Therefore, they could not have had results. My interest in that is that figure of those who did not write, who made up that big figure, is that part of that 533, or are they not part of that? Another broad question, it relates to the quintiles that you are referring to. I'm not sure how confident we are with this quintile differentiation. I'm throwing this question deliberately. I was in a school only last week Friday in Willowvale. This school is surrounded with all these this fact, if one can call it. But it was only declared a quintile tree this year. And we do know throughout the country where you find that for no clear reason, these are defined one. And that's showing you they add confidence on this quintile differentiation. The last one, broad one, I was under the impression that the schools were going to get their results on the 29th, and then it goes public on the 30th. And the idea was schools should know before, and therefore. I see in your slide, you say both it is the 30th. Was there a change, or was I confused up?
Thank you, Chair. And let me confirm firstly, the 33,000 who did not write were part of that 50,000 overall figure. So the Minister announced 50,000 that we did not have results for. In fact, very soon became apparent that some 30,000, 33,000, in fact, had not written at all, so clearly would not get results. So suddenly that number came down to the 17,000 that we've been... No, they were not part of the 533. Yeah. 533 were those who actually wrote, who wrote at least one exam, let me put it that way. Not all of them wrote every exam. You might get a child who wrote two or three, and then perhaps the death in the family didn't write the others. So those would have been part of the 533. But the 33,000 who did not write any subjects were not part of that 533. Okay. So, Chair, it has been a very complex process. But, you know, I think we must understand this time, for the first time, instead of the provinces processing their results, we managed the entire exam system, from the papers, the setting, the distribution, and, of course, the collation of marks at a national level. Now, you know, this, in a sense, has revealed a number of issues. I'm sorry to say that in the past, there were, in fact, a number of students who didn't get results. But in a sense, you didn't hear about them. What happened is the provinces did the processing as they needed to, and they just submitted to the national office those that they had processed. So when the minister released the results in previous years, she clearly released the results of those that we knew about, that had been processed, etc. In a way, that's why sometimes you would then see in January a story in the paper about a learner who says, no, I haven't got my results yet, and we would all scratch our heads at the national level, but how did this happen? They sent us all the results. Clearly, provinces were indeed still sitting on a fair number of results as well, and now the fact that we have run this at a national level, in a sense, has exposed that situation. So this is now, obviously, we need policy approaches on it to ensure that these kind of things are processed in a proper way. Let me also say that in previous years, provinces were able to get away with this thing because if they did not have the marks for the school-based assessment, in fact, it was possible, the computer system was written, that you could then just ignore that school-based assessment and only take the exam mark. This generally worked against learners because normally your school-based assessment is higher than your exam mark, so it would be in your interest, in a sense, to have both. But where there was not a school-based mark, for some reason, if the school hadn't submitted it or whatever else, you just took the exam mark and the student still got their result. Because the system now has been so tightened up that it insists on a school-based assessment mark, that's where some of these have been caught out who previously would not have been. So, Chair, in a way, what I'm saying is that in part, the difficulties we faced have been difficulties that have been in the system previously, but in a way have not been exposed because of the way the system has been running. The system now is a strict system, it's a nationally run system, and in a way, that's why we've been able to see these anomalies coming out, and as I say, that obviously we need to address. Chair, your question on the quintiles is a long-standing one, and I think we take your point. I am pleased to say that the Minister is instituting a review of the whole funding mechanisms around our schools, and one of the questions being posed is whether the quintile system is indeed still valid in the way that it has been. I think your point, the distinction between a quintile 1, quintile 2, and a quintile 3, particularly in a poorer province, is really minuscule, and it does look as though in 2009, we will be funding all quintile 1, 2, and 3 schools at an equivalent level. So effectively, they will all be bundled into one so-called quintile. It's not a quintile anymore. But in a way, Chair, what it's leading us towards more is a real sense of perhaps just a two-part distinction of essentially no-fee schools and fee-paying schools, because really that's what your distinction is. And all non-fee-paying schools must probably all be treated the same, and others perhaps also treated the same. We will be coming to you fairly soon, I'm sure, with perhaps some initial thoughts on that review, and I would really welcome, I think, the inputs, but you have identified that difficulty undoubtedly. I think the presentation perhaps then is incorrect. Certainly results were given to schools on the 29th. But the intention of giving it to schools on that day was purely for the schools to be able to look at the results and, in a sense, do a final check. You know, schools know their candidates, and if they know there's a really good kid and they get the results and the results say this child has failed, then, you know, pick up the phone and tell us, hold on, you know, are you sure? Just double-check this one. Similarly, there might be a child who's never done any scrap of work during the whole term or whole year, and they're given a 70% mark. You know, hold on, pick up the phone, find out. So really, that was the intention for schools, just to do a final scrutiny. Is it consistent? Is it what they... that sort of thing, with a view to then handing those to learners on the 30th. Regrettably, some schools jumped the gun, and of course the ones that did so were those who were, I think, most proud of their results. I think there was a school in Umlazi who was so proud of their 100% that, yeah, the minute they got their results, they went public with it, and there were press statements and everything. So, Chair, it's something that we'd have to just perhaps manage a bit tighter for the coming year, but we have no doubt that the approach of giving the results to schools first, and of learners getting the results from schools, has been absolutely the right one. I was delighted to see so many learners actually going to the schools, still in school uniform, to collect their results. Now compare that to previous years where they were hanging around in the streets, getting drunk, waiting for those newspapers to come out in the morning. I think we've changed that terrain, certainly, and we will continue, certainly, to release them through the schools in the first instance and then in the media thereafter. The media, of course, have not been happy. They didn't sell many newspapers on the 30th of December as they would normally have done, but that's their problem, not ours. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thank you so much. You know, I've got quite a host of comments, questions to make. I hope you give me the latitude. I'm working fundamentally on the presentation, the overview and analysis, because the technical report just elucidates further. So starting on page 2, because page 1 is just, you know, stating what most of us already know. I'm looking at, you know, the pass rate. You know. And I must say, given that it was a completely new way of doing things, the logistics, the logistical
side. That is Honorable Ntuli, ANC.
For me, it was really a nightmare of a situation, especially new curricular areas like mathematical literacy, because when one looks at that statement, you see just a mixture of arithmetic, commerce, and so on, and maths. And whether we still have that teacher around who could cope, and so they've coped. But the picture looks a bit sad, you know, when 200,000 children get nowhere. It reflects that the system, you know, it's still a long way to go. But it also reflects legacy where we come from, you know, painfully. You know. Because every year we read in the press more than 1 million kids are starting. And then you see a situation of just an order above 500,000 writing metric bills. Where are these other 500? One wonders. Where are we losing the children? Because one must look holistically, you know, at the whole setup. And then the harvest ultimately ends up at about 300,000. Simple means it's just 30% of those kids who started, you know, have made the grade. But that's a long-term thing. On the next page, you know, think of challenges. I take the last bulletin as a starting point. It is recognized that teachers' expertise is often clustered around urban nodes, which is of course true. Young people in particular, they like bright lights, more amenities, and so on. We have started, you know, a wonderful thing, Naledi schools. Obviously, the harvest, as reported here, is highly appreciated. They are only 7%, they contribute 24% of the pastoral, three times as much. Now, these Naledi schools, again, because of resources, in most cases, I would assume, I don't have a head count, they are located, you know, in urban areas, townships and so on. Now, that being a challenge, you know, this is not a thing that can be solved today or tomorrow. But I think we should give thought, you know, to reopening some of the old boarding schools and training colleges, locate them in those so-called rural areas as nodules, you know, to develop quality education in these rural provinces. Obviously, we have to do a cost analysis, you know, the cost of, you know, rehabilitating and renovating, you know, those buildings. Because we've got a lot of such buildings, you know, that are lying waste. Some of them are being vandalized, including training colleges. That could, perhaps, as a pilot study, one in each of these provinces, notably the rural provinces, to have these poor children there, given the fact that they are the recipient of a lot of social, you know, pathologies. The parents are not there because of migration purposes, they've moved to urban areas, the parent age, you know, is grandparents most of the time. Now, then there is this issue, you know, that hovers over my mind. The issue of the curse. How reliable is this curse? Are we sure that, you know, the teachers in these schools, you know, are offering us reliable, objective marks, you know, given the fact that many of these districts are not yet functioning at optimal level because of lack of resources, which perhaps won't be there, you know, in a year or 2 years' time. And what are the plans, you know, to strengthen that situation? Because it's quite a sizable mark there, you know, 25%. We should give children certificates that are worth it. You know. Then I move on quickly, you know, to the next page. You know. The issue of mathematics. Getting a higher mark than physical science. I may not be fully aware with the current curricula and so on. But my thinking is that children generally understand physical science, obviously they've got to do it with maths, you know. Much, much better, because maths is more abstract. Then it raises questions. Was the math paper too comparatively easy? Or was the physical science comparatively, you know, more difficult, you know, because it just does not follow normal patterns that we're used to. You know. I'm happy, you know, about that positive statement, you know, about answering, you know, Prof's, you know, issue of quintals, because it worries us. You know. Poverty is not just located in some people.
I'm worried. I don't know when you're saying next page, isn't it? Because I don't know what you're talking about. And
I'm now on page 7.
Now I'm saying you're saying page 7. They don't know what you're referring to.
I'm referring to this mess business. And the mess business.
No, no, I'm just trying to clear everybody.
Oh.
And basically what you are having is what our researchers have come up with.
Mm.
And even other members have questions based on that document.
Mm.
It seems now you want to take it all by yourself and go from page one to the last page. Why don't you just take a few and
okay.
If your questions are not...
Okay, Prof, I'll rest my case then.
Yes, yes, you can come back. Under Buena.
Thank you, Professor. I have a few concerns here. One would have expected the National Department of Education, which did the marking and the processing of results, as well as releasing them, to do a better job than the provinces. But it strikes me that over 700 candidates may have cheated during the examination. What strikes me further is that this was made known long after the results were released. The question is, why was it kept secret for a long time? I have reason to believe that it was only made public because it was going to leak anyway. Number two, the Department of Education announced that the results will be released on the 30th of December 2008. However, on the 29th of December 2008, some of the results were released in certain schools in KZN. Many candidates whose results were not released in KZN were frustrated and stressed. Clearly this is a discrepancy, and the question is, why did this happen, and where and were the consequences of those and were those responsible actually held to account, because this was a serious discrepancy. According to maths educators, the matric maths question paper was of extremely low standard. The question here is, does the National Department of Education call this a valid and credible examination if teachers who are actually teaching mathematics, so that the paper, the question paper of maths, was not of the required standard for matric examination? Certain educators reported inflation of marks, but this was also indicated by a teacher yesterday who is teaching at a German school. In a meeting, we had a meeting with MEC for Western Cape yesterday, and the teacher came to present a case where in her school, children who were getting distinctions right through the year, surprisingly, they got sloppy marks at the end of this year in matric. And her claim is that there was clear deflation of those marks. And I think discrepancies such as this must be actually looked closely into in the next examinations, so that they do not recur. On the 31st of December, 08, when matric results were released, over 56,000 educants' results were outstanding, and the reasons given were flimsy. We are still waiting for genuine and honest explanation from the National Department of Education as to why the results were not released in the entirety countrywide as it should happen. We have seen results being released in drip drops, and I think this is not good either for parents or learners themselves. The first week of January was given as a deadline on which all outstanding matric results will be released, but this did not occur. Instead, outstanding results were released in drip drops, and as we are seated here, we're still getting the report from the presenter that some results have not yet been released still. On the 20th of January, 09, over 3,000 matrics in Mpumalanga had not yet received their results. And we're talking about children who actually have to prepare for the ensuing year as to whether they're going to work or they're going to universities. But these children are just held hamstrung by
the fact that their results are not released. And I would actually make a very, very strong plea to the department that this should not be repeated, because it actually says to everybody who looks into our system of education that we actually do not know what you're doing. And my last comment is, the passing of matric by 30% and 40%, to me, actually, that is not a pass. Because how does a child pass with 30%? Where is 70% of her work or his work? And if we allow children to pass by 30% and 40%, we are actually unleashing children into the streets to just join the ranks of criminals, because there's nothing else that they can do. Thank you.
I'm just going down in a row, so that way.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think in the first place, the delay in the release of a number of the results, especially those attributed to the late submission of earmarks by either schools, principals, or departments, or provincial departments. Sorry, that was my phone, Chair. I think we should take that very seriously indeed. I noted the statement by the Minister of Education that I think it was one of the principals who had to submit marks. When they tried to locate him, he was on the beach, and he had to retrieve those marks from the boot of his car. Now, I think we must take very, very seriously indeed such gross negligence in all cases where cumulative marks have not been submitted on time for some or other reason. And we must stamp out this kind of thing, and we must inculcate very, very strongly indeed a culture of responsibility around the timely submission of cumulative marks. Secondly, Chair, I just want to refer to, you know, this portfolio committee and our responsibility with regard to our oversight function to education. We are a national body. We the National Portfolio Education Committee. And I think it is accepted amongst us that there be robust oversight over our over the department. But if we say robust oversight, then must also be responsible oversight. I don't think, you know, as colleagues in this portfolio committee, we can accept statements that are put out to the world on the basis of political expediency. Now, quite clearly, this these statements by particularly Mrs. van der Walt about this, that markers have claimed that they've been told to inflate marks. I think from the side of the MEC in the Western Cape, quite clearly, considerable and thorough investigations have already been made. The name of the person who had claimed this, who had allegedly told the DA that he was told by a departmental official that was told to inflate marks. The provincial department contacted this person, and the person flatly denied that he made these statements to the DA and insisted that he was neither a marker nor involved in the marker in the marking of scripts in any way. Now, this is the only thing that the MEC has in terms of what has been submitted to him, in terms of the statement that's been put out to the world, which places a tremendous question mark over the credibility of these results. And I say once again, where criticism is due, criticism must be done. And we accept that. We are going to criticize, and we are going to do our oversight robustly. But I think we shouldn't put out statements out there merely for the sake of point scoring, political point scoring, or political expediency. And once again, the MEC for Western Cape has stated once again that he has nothing. He has absolutely nothing to verify these statements. He's given a further 5 days. We've noted the statement by the DA in terms of that, but one is pleading. Let's be responsible. And if there's no substance to particular allegations, let's not just put it out in the public arena to try to score points. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Fortunately, Honorable Boinama has repeated that now in this meeting, that the marks have been inflated. Honorable Mfundisi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some general questions, although based on the document itself. Is there really need for additional tuition? I thought that when a year program, a year timetable is set, it is set that students, their teachers, and everybody have to be in school in class Monday to Friday and ensure that good work is done. And if they've got to go to school even on Saturdays, continuously during their holidays, and over and above that, this additional tuition that the department also seems to be so obsessed with, does it take place in all the schools, or is it only in selected schools? The question still stands, why is it mainly just to see the children pass? And then the other question is, what do you prefer to call examination exam plus or whatever? Call model papers, examination model papers. How many per subject or per learning area, if that is the correct terminology these days, how many per learning area were issued for the entire 10 to 12, grade 10 to grade 12 learning period for in terms of this? And then have they been so helpful? The other question was raised by my brother here, although I would put it the other way around to say that because it was noted that some schools did not submit, has the department actually found out where the problem lay? Is it at the school, at the district, or at the province? Because to me, as a former education official myself, I would have detected at a certain stage that certain marks are not in here. And therefore, these marks shouldn't have proceeded to a point where, at national level, we are told that these children should have passed because it left this or that. So somewhere, somebody who has not done her work or his work. Finally, the presenter here, the DG, spoke about some metric classes having to be moved from their bases or from those schools because they have underperformed. In the first instance, was it necessary to have them there? If you take an instance like the Duren Lachter thing, where this culture of combined schools from grade 1 to grade 12, I don't think this type of arrangement will ever yield good results. Finally, the department, although this looks like it's more provincially based, would pronounce themselves on the wisdom and the advisability of having to remove pupils, or as you prefer to call them, learners, from one area and say you remove the region from Tila River, in this case, you remove them, and then you take them to an opposite here or in the north, in the Mafeking area, to a certain place. Is it educationally sound at the end of the day? You just have to look at that and whether this would yield good results. Not necessarily good results only, but also to ensure that the pupils who come out of those schools are really educated, they are men and women of substance, because the idea here is not just to get symbols. Thank you very much.
For the PMC, Honorable Mfundi, the UCDP.
As you were speaking about the provinces that needed that were of particular concern, like
that
the
is Honorable Dudley, ACDP.
Thank you. As you were talking about those provinces of particular concern, like the Eastern Cape, you mentioned that there were plans and that you would speak about them later. Perhaps you can elaborate a bit on that. And I'm just particularly interested in whether there's been any very serious thought given. Because it came up again in terms of where you mentioned, obviously, the relation between the more affluent areas and the more poverty-stricken areas, but to the fact that from grade 10 to 12, there will be no nutrition provided for those particular children, which means there's an awful lot of learning that's got to go on, perhaps with children who are not eating at all, so and how much that's affected the results and will affect the results.
I'm going to allow the DDG, if it's all right, to respond to most of these, perhaps just to pick up on Honourable Dudley's. Firstly, we are in discussion with the Eastern Cape in particular about support to that province. There are discussions between the political principals, and I'm sure fairly soon an announcement will be made about a broad range of support to the Eastern Cape, but part of that indeed will be around the functionality of schools and their performance.
When you talk about Eastern Cape, just to say, in the Eastern Cape, I just made my own analysis as you try to come up with whatever you're coming up with. In the district of IDG, which was second to Bizana, with 32%, I found that of those 23 districts of Eastern Cape, the district that got less than 40%, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, all of them are from the former Tonsa. And if you go to the district that got 50% above, of the 10 districts of the 23, only 3 came from the former Tonsa. And only 2 from the east, that is not from the Transkei, were less than 50%. Which to me seems, when we talk Eastern Cape, I want us to be more realistic. It is not the Eastern Cape, it is the former Transkei that is real core.
The Eastern Cape. Thank you, Chair. Let me just tell you, Chair, we're meeting all the district heads, in fact, this time next week, which will explain why I'm afraid I won't be able to be with your committee, but the DDG will be, and part of it will be to go through those very results, try to understand them, etc., but that's across the whole country. But as I say, we are talking to the Eastern Cape at the moment about the kind of support they need, and I've no doubt they will identify also those very areas that you've spoken about, and we'll have to see what we can do. I just wanted to happily tell Ms. Dudley that from April this year, Quintile 1 secondary schools will be included in the National School Nutrition Program. So your poorest secondary schools will be included as from April this year when that budget comes on stream. Let me hand over now, if I may, Chair, to the DDG. She'll take some of them, and I'll possibly wrap up with any more.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to start with the continuous assessment, sir, and whether we can rely on the continuous assessment. I think that it is very uneven across schools. One of our major interventions to try to improve the internal assessment, what we call a school-based assessment or continuous assessment, is exactly to get out the exemplar papers in grades 10, 11, and 12. And as you can see, both through our textbooks and through our study mates, to really flood schools with what is the standard of the assessment that you should set. And so we've got now many hundreds of schools who we can literally predict their end-year results off of their internal assessment. In other words, over the last 5 years, we've been able to see very close relationship between their internal assessment and the exam. In the other schools, we're trying to move them closer through our exemplar papers, but that means starting at grade 10, 11, and 12 to make sure that we get that. The continuous task of assessment in grade 9 is also helping us to bridge that gap. But it's important to say that when we provide the final results, if the internal assessment and the exam are too far apart, the internal assessment gets discarded. It's not as though that then over-advantages or disadvantages learners. But in this year, because of Umalusi gives us a report saying what we did well and where we need to improve. And the biggest concern of Umalusi is the school-based assessment. And that's where on the 3rd of February, we have a meeting with all the provinces to start to say, how do we strengthen the school-based assessment? When it comes to irregularities, the irregularities are a matter of public debate and concern. If you read the regulations that govern the administration of the examination, it spells out very clearly what an irregularity is. So, Mr. Boynama, the number of irregularities this year is much lower than it's ever been before, partly because we're providing information to schools about what counts as an irregularity, and it's never been a matter of secret. There's something called the National Irregularities Committee, the teacher unions, Higher Education South Africa, Umalusi, and SAQA sit on that, and they deliberate well before we release the results. In fact, we may not release the results until the Irregularities Committee has sat and has determined what counts as an irregularity. Sometimes by the time when they sat on the 29th of December, they had already resolved some of the irregularities, but some of these are deep-seated. It's not only relating to cheating. Sometimes, for example, in the computer applications technology, we were not able to retrieve the practical examination. For that reason, we've moved the examination a little earlier this year. And so there are a large range of reasons for these irregularities, but we cannot take them lightly. For those reasons, we'd like to investigate and make sure that we get it right. And so those irregularities, Chair, are not anything secret. They're a matter of public record. And we then, by the end of January, we will again pronounce and say which we've been able to resolve. Hopefully there will be none that are unresolved. When we come to the mathematics and and physical science, I think the Minister has asked for an investigation into that. That team that has been appointed met yesterday, and they will pronounce on their findings. But I think it's important to say that the mathematics and physical science, which have been compared, in fact, more 45% of learners passed the mathematics and 54% passed the physical science. So it's not clear to me where it's coming from that the mathematics is easier and the physical science more difficult. But again, it's important that we wait for that announcement. We also must look at who's saying this about the mathematics paper, and it's important to get the names of those who are saying that the mathematics paper was easy, because there are two professional associations, the South African Math Society, which represents all the academics in the country, and the Association of Math Educators of South Africa, AMISA, which represents all the math teachers of South Africa. It's those that we take very seriously, and those are serving on the committee that the Minister has appointed. In relation to the inflation and deflation of marks, I think that we have also called on any of those who have made such claims to put it in writing so that we are clear. And here really it is only in the Western Cape that investigation is being taken further, and we will get the outcome of that in 5 days' time. This particular school that's reported a deflation in marks, they have the opportunity to ask for a remark. It costs almost nothing, and we urge those schools that feel that they didn't get the results that they wanted to ask for a remark. But certainly, this is confined to a very small number of schools. In terms of those learners who didn't get the results on time, and Chair, this is a matter that we take very seriously. We're very disappointed. We've spent a lot of time with each individual learners that have reported not getting results. I have personally been in contact with all the HEIs. If there is any learner who is being disadvantaged by an HEI not being able to be registered, then I need to get their names from Mr. Boynama, because they have said that they will take the grade 11 results and that they only require the written results by the end of January. So at the moment, we know of no learner who's being disadvantaged. At the same time, we take very seriously and are disappointed that learners can't get their results. In relation to the additional tuition, I think that it's true to say that we believe that the curriculum can be covered if all 200 days are used, if all 6 hours are used. But that's not always a reality. Also, we have found, and this is certainly something that, that expert subject people have discovered when they talk about why have we seen more children doing well in mathematics. It's particularly in mathematics that learners have had extra tuition. There has been anxiety, and I think in some ways it's been good anxiety. There's been extra energy put in because there's a new curriculum. One finds this across the world. And so we've seen a lot of learners enrolling for Saturday schools, winter schools, summer schools, and particularly taking advantage of the SABC's running extra tuition programs so children can watch it in their homes or in community centers. Some learners have reported up to 50 to 60 hours additional hours of mathematics or physical science. We think this is to the good. But too, that doesn't take away from the fact that the main tuition must take place in school, and that's what our quality learning campaign is about, more time in school. But I think that in grade 12 it's not a bad thing if learners get extra tuition. In relation to the exemplars, it's true to say that we really only got out exemplars in the big 12 enrollment subjects. In those cases, there were two set by the exam panels in grade 10, 11, and 12, but then also lots of teachers, lots of publishers also put out exemplar papers, and we managed to get out a maximum of 4 exemplars to all learners through our Study Make program. But many schools, I was speaking to a maths teacher who really delighted with her maths results and also with a high quality of exam. Of what the new curriculum has done is to bring back the idea of sharing. That she set up a website and everybody shares. They say you will be voted off the website if you don't contribute your June exam or your test. And she says one of the great things that the new curriculum has brought is a lot of sharing of tests and exams. So I can't give you exactly the quantity of exemplars that are out there, but what the national department put out was between 2 and 4 for every subject. I think the last one, DG, I want to talk about is the 200,000 learners that failed. And, of course, this is a great tragedy. But we need to look at this in historical perspective. We really should say that 1 million children start school every year. The 1.1 million is often grade 5s who enroll early, and our grade R program is set to deal with that. We keep at 1 million right across from grade 1 to grade 10, and that's something we're really proud of. When we went to school, 10 years ago, we certainly saw big dropouts from grade 8 going down. Now we retain literally every child in school until they're 17. We have a greater retention rate up to 17 even than Great Britain. So if you look at the grade 10 enrollments, we still have over 1 million there. We then go down to 900,000, 910,000 in grade 11. In other words, the first time we start losing students is from grade 10 to grade 11, and then from grade 11 we go down from the 900,000 to the 600,000 odd. So we're losing 300,000. Now, that is not good enough. We will continue to try to improve that drop from the 900,000 to the 300,000. Either through our FET colleges or improved retention in schools. But let's look at this historically. In 1991, there was under 400,000 people in matric. A small percentage of Africans who are currently in matric. Now, we need to look at it from 1991 to 2008, every year, 10 to 20 to 30,000 additional children write matric. Now, what I'm trying to say is that while that 300,000 drop from grade 11 to grade 12 in 2007 and 2008 is something we have to improve on, we have every year from 1991 been improving on that. And the dramatic increase, which the DG showed you from 2003 to 2008, is 150,000 more learners wrote in 2008 than wrote in 2003. And that historically is the gains we are making, good gains, but we need to continue to improve on that.
I
So there's a very minimal fee. I think that it's 50 rand per paper, but any learner who is in a no-fee school or who is exempt from school fees does not pay that amount. In relation to the 30%, Chair, here's our difficulty. If you calculate what you used to require in marks to get the old matric exam, it's a low number of marks in the past than it is now. The difficulty, the requirement now, is that we've put for all our subjects together into one exam, the old higher grade and standard grade. Now, when you do that, you have to pack in the cognitive demand of a much greater range. At the 30% level, this is the difficulty. You could raise the pass mark and say, let's say that 50% is the pass mark, and then the exams are easy. Now, 50% on an easy exam is not the same as 30% on a difficult exam. Now, that's the question. What do we want to do? Do we want to say, let's have 50% as the pass mark and then have easy exams? I think that this is a difficult question. We'll continue to look at it. But just because something is a 30% pass rate doesn't mean that that is easy.
Perhaps just to make the point, it's not 30%. It's three subjects at 30%. It's three subjects at 40%. So, you know, that is there. And bear in mind, under the old matric, you could actually get as low as 25 and still pass your matric. So, as the DDG says, in fact, the standard has been raised, I think, and certainly if you look at the quality of the papers that go with that. Chair, if I can just touch on then a couple of other points. One is to say we have reported to this committee already on the LURITS system, your Learner Unit Record and Information Tracking System. That system is now in place. It's currently been populated with data from the provinces. That will obviously give us the possibility of checking and tracking every single student from grade 0 up to grade 12 and in a sense be able to continue the work we've done in terms of retaining students here. I remind us also, of course, we did last year publish that retention report, which spelt out, I think, some of the information that the DDG has just indicated. Just on the maths paper one, I would invite the members to look at the Umalusi report. You might be aware that in their original report, they had indicated that there were questions about the standard of the matric paper. Following further work by themselves, they have in fact amended their report and they have taken that section out of their report. So at this stage, Umalusi has no questions from their side about the standard of the maths paper. Chair, the issue of matric centres being removed, I think, Chair, it's an overall question about the organisation and rationalisation of schools. We do know, for example, that we have too many small schools in our country. We're many, many under 50, and you know, we make the point sometimes that economically this is inefficient, but more importantly for us, educationally it's inefficient. It takes resources, you don't get good quality. So you'll see a lot of provinces, and in fact I think some of the success of the Free State in this exam is that they themselves have closed down a number of those schools, brought children together, given them hostel facilities, etc., and certainly provided a better education experience. You will see, of course, with the recent norms and standards that we've published around schools, we have focused on that issue of the organization of schools, and I think that is important. A related one, you know, one thing perhaps we didn't highlight in the presentation is that the target we had of maths, 50,000 high-grade maths passes, high-level maths passes, of course we don't have high-grade anymore, so we regarded a high-level pass as over 50%. Chair, the target we set of 50,000, I'm happy to say, was exceeded, and we had, in fact, 63,000 high-level math passes. So certainly, I think that side is certainly picking up, and I'm glad to see Mr. Ntuli had the full report there, because we also didn't mention it. The dinner lady schools, as you said, 7% of our schools, but they delivered 24%. Of those high-level math passes. So clearly what we've learned here is that focused schools, focused intervention, focused support for these kind of areas certainly delivers results, and that's important. But linked perhaps to the question of the organization of schools, Chair, we visited at the opening of schools one Kwandabele Maths and Science School in Mpumalanga.
Now, we can all be critical of the homelands, but I have to say they got some things right, and one of them is they did build these kind of focused schools, and interestingly, they built it with a substantial hostel as well. Now, I'm sorry to say that that hostel has now fallen into neglect. It's not being used, and the visit there with, in fact, the Premier and the MEC, it was agreed that that issue of the hostel should be resuscitated. I think, Chair, there was a period during which we were not very keen on boarding facilities at schools. I think that mood has changed significantly. Interestingly, the school, let me just give you a little information about it. It's under-enrolled for a start, so it has room for more learners. It gets 100% pass every year, and this is a science school, so you have to do maths and science. There's no other stream. It's a maths and science stream. Chair, the fees there are 140 rand per year. I have to say that's a bargain. For 140 rand, you guarantee the matric pass in maths and science. Clearly, there's something happening at a school like that. We encourage the MEC and Premier to look at those boarding facilities, perhaps to refurbish them, because one of the things you want to do is ensure that that sort of facility is not just accessible to learners in that area, but is in fact able to attract particularly from rural and farm schools around into that kind of venue. So I think there's a changing mood around that issue of hostels, and although, you know, we must be careful and not disrupt social environments, in the Free State, for example, every Friday those children are transported back home, they spend the weekends at home, but you know, when they're at school, they're getting 3 meals a day, they're getting supervised homework in the afternoon, we cannot imagine that they will not perform better in the end of it. So I think, as I said, that mood is changing a little bit, and part of that broader reorganization, I think, is what has to happen. And believe you me, it's not just at a primary school. You find many rural parts of the country where there are two secondary schools next door to each other. Part, I'm afraid, of a bit of a legacy of patronage where you know, you wanted a high school in every chief area, as it were. I think that's a bigger organization thing that we've got to sort out, and possibly the committee can be very useful there in identifying schools that should either be merged or whatever else to produce that. Thank you, Chair.
Wandul, I stopped you. Do you want to continue with your page 7? Or have you... Let's start with Mema Sangwa. She's too close, I didn't see her.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is to commend the department and the minister. And just to say, we really appreciate what I mean, the response to the nation during that difficult time where the nation wanted to get some answers regarding the whole issue of matric results. And then I'm sure as South Africans, we are all aware that this is not for the department only. This is our baby, everybody, parents. So, and then also to thank our whip, Mr. Honorable Randall, for his response to some of the issues. And mine is just to check from the department. How, when can we expect the every learner to or when can we expect the completion of this or outstanding results? And then is there any support? And the other one is whether there is any support given to parents and the learners who are still waiting for their results. And then the other one, it's maybe to check, because now it's already end of January. What is it going to happen to those students or those learners who are without results up to now? Are they maybe supporting mechanisms to assist them? And then the other one is the question on the, or maybe for the department to indicate how the challenges of national poor performance in the agricultural science particularly raised by the Eastern Cape education is to be addressed, given its potential to contribute to increasing food security. Thank you, Chairperson.
PMG, that is Honorable Mashangwane of the ANC. I don't know, responding to this question of these learners. As I was telling the speakers late evening yesterday, these parents from Sibrand, talking about Sibrand in particular, those parents have been breathing off my neck. As late as evening yesterday, they were still asking what is the problem. They don't get the feedback. They don't know who to, what is what.
I'm happy the DG, you know, accepts cautiously, though, you know, the concept of reopening some boarding schools. Quite true, some were good, others were bad, you know. And that is a very expensive project. You know. But I didn't get a clear indication whether the department acknowledges what is happening in the Northwest, or the department would encourage the provinces to do likewise on a very selective basis, you know. Along the Naledi schools model, or there is an envisaged possibility of a policy framework along those schools. I raise this thing, focusing on the need of so-called focus schools, and also to cut down expenses. Some of these farm schools, multi-grade teaching, all that thing, it just contributes to ineffective teaching. But we get these children together. Even again, the social pathologies that I've indicated, and use that school as an anchor point for the weaker schools around.
Baba Poinamu.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the first week of January, rather not the first week of January, but when the first week when the schools are reopened for this year, we made some visits to schools to just check on the school readiness. It was very, very sad to hit two schools, which started working last year. They were opened last year. The new schools, both of them. They are two secondary schools. They were declared Novi schools because they are in a squalor area, both of them. But up to now, those schools are just surviving. They don't get any cent from the department. I want to know whose responsibility is this. How can those schools be assisted? Because my understanding is if the school is declared Northeast school, teachers cannot even ask learners to pop out 1 rand or 50 cents. But those schools are just surviving. How can we help those schools? I have the names of the schools. I know where they are situated. I know the headmasters.
No more questions. On the school that is school fees at 140, it's a good school. I don't know what is the formula used to define these no-fee schools. If you had to ask me, I wouldn't go about geography, who is who. Just the type of fees the schools are charging. Just take last 3 years. If the last 3 years average was 100, 150, and your minimum for no fee school is, what is it, 154? Is it? I'm saying, why don't we make this easy as a formula? So that all we do, instead of saying, what's that South Africa is saying, we just go to the school in the last 3 years, what was your fee per year? If your average in the last fee for the last 3 years was less than, then you put whatever figure, say 300. And you just declare that they're no fee school so that you push them off. Because you find that the problem with some of those schools, I think when we were in Mpumalanga, the school was not declared a no fee school. It was a good school. The learners were running away from the school to the Nofi school. The first principal decided to declare his school a Nofi school, but couldn't get any funding from anywhere. That is one of the dilemmas of this program. The second question, there's a general understanding in most of the schools that I visit, high school. I'm reminded when you are saying it is 7 hours a day, 196 days a year, that is the bare minimum. But you look at the timetable of most schools. Friday, you stop at 1. But when you go to the other days, they don't go beyond 3. Because my 7 hours, literally, if you start at 8, you must end at 3. You find out they end at 3 Monday to Thursday. But Friday is a norm, they understood. It seems even the exemplars that are given by the chief directors, you name them, let us not have this understanding that Friday is half day. Can't we push this in a more formal sense and have a specialized need to change that country?
Thank you, Chair. That, of course, is precisely what our quality learning and teaching campaign is about. And let me just remind us that while we talk about 7 hours of contact time, which is right to 8 till 3, in addition to that, there's an extra hour and a half per day of preparation and marking that teachers should be doing. So many of the discussions about administrative overload, first question you've got to ask is, are you using your 1.5 hours before you start telling us about how this is eating into your 7 hours? So part of that is about the expectation. Chair, you're absolutely right. I was at a school the other day, 11 o'clock on a Friday. The teachers had all gone. Some parents were around. And I said to the parents, but you must be very angry. And they said to me, why? And I said, haven't you noticed? All your teachers have gone. And they then turned the joke on me and said, no, but haven't you noticed? It's Friday today. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, they go early on a Friday. They said, isn't that what all schools do? And I said, no, you know, the good schools, they're there till 5 o'clock on a Friday. They come back on Saturday because it's probably sport, and by Sunday they're preparing for Monday again. The parents said, oh, we'd better talk to our teachers about this. So part of it, Chair, is about expectations. The community in some cases doesn't know what, in a way, the services that they're entitled to. So part of the quality teaching and learning campaign is actually to make those things visible, make them known in communities, and in the end, to ask communities to monitor the thing. We, as Minister just now, will be receiving a report from the committee she set up around this so-called inspectorate, as it were. And I have consistently said to the teacher unions, if you think you've got worries about this need you and the inspectors, I said, wait for that old lady down the road when she finds out that you're supposed to be there until 3 o'clock on a Friday and that you haven't been coming. You've got a lot more to fear from her than any inspectorate, yeah? So in a sense, it's about communities ensuring they know what they've got a right to expect and monitoring it. So I think that is, you're right, about simply putting this more and more in the public domain.
Can you give us a copy of that? I don't know if it's a regulation or whatever, an excerpt.
It's
which tells us that, sure, so that we all know we can go from that pipe. Well, I think nobody knows it.
Well, people choose sometimes not to publicise these things. It is, in fact, a collective agreement with the teacher unions. I'm not sure if it was struck when Randall was still there, but so be it. It is a collective agreement. So, in fact, we will certainly do that, Sean. Chair, the quintile issue, as I said earlier, there is thinking about reviewing this. At the moment, of course, we have 40% of our learners. So in other words, all quintile 1 and quintile 2 schools are automatically declared no-fee schools. Interestingly, that is about 58% of all the schools in the country. So, you know, when we're talking about reaching 60% of schools, we're actually very nearly there already, but they, in fact, at the moment, cover 40% of learners. Chair, I think the review will throw up the sort of issues you're asking, and I think in the end we will end up with a simpler system which effectively, as I said, either puts you into a no-fee or a fee context, and it'll be clear in between, and everyone then who's no-fee will be treated the same with the same kind of allocations, and we'll move on that. But just on that one, Mr. Bonamo's issue about the allocations to schools,
These, as you mentioned, are new schools, and I would certainly appreciate the names thereof. We will follow it up. But you will recall that at the end of last year, we published an amendment to the school funding norms that compels a province now to make at least two payments to a school. One of those payments must be in November of the previous year, so that by the time the school opens, it actually has money in its account in order to be able to do what it has to do. Now, that obviously would apply to an existing school. There might be an administrative gap where there's a new school, and maybe that hasn't set up a bank account yet or something. I don't know. We'd have to look into it. But certainly I will look at those, and you know, they must obviously get their allocation as well. But an ordinary school should find, by November each year, they should be getting that allocation. Chepham, Mr. Mpuli, certainly I think we have supported Northwest and Free State in particular, who have been pursuing this thing of closing smaller schools, merging, consolidating. You will see sometimes it's at, you know, the communities aren't always overexcited about these things, particularly where they have a bit of an interest in keeping a particular school going. Sad to say, in one instance I know in Gauteng, where the teachers have in a sense mobilized the community to try and argue that the school should remain. But actually, the school is a poor school. It hasn't been functioning well. It's got very few learners left. We've moved those learners, consolidated, merged with another school, and in a sense, those teachers have to move with that school as well. I think it is a correct one. And broadly, the policy framework the minister is pushing us to is to expand on this notion of the dinner lady schools and look at focus schools for other areas as well. Schools of the arts, schools of drama, agricultural schools, whatever they might be, even our technical high schools we're in the process of investigating and refurbishing. So I think that kind of policy framework certainly is one that we would be supporting. I'm very happy, the Honourable Mahlangwane, education is everybody's business. And again, that's what the campaign is about, making it everybody's business. I'm very cautious about putting a deadline on the completion of results. I've been proved wrong before, but let me just reiterate that the province is working day and night, and we have sent a team down from the National Department as well. There was certainly a problem with the computer in that it was seemed to be a very slow interface with the National Department. That has been corrected, and things are certainly moving at the moment. Even last night we saw quite a dramatic drop. Another 400 or so were processed, I understand. Mpumalanga has set up a call centre, and I can provide you with that number, and ultimately I think we should guide parents to be calling that number. It does seem to us that where parents are able to give us the name, the exam number, and any other details, that we are able to see either this result is being withheld for some reason, or no it's not, or here's your results, or whatever, but we're able to certainly move it forward, and that has helped us enormously. But the critical thing is names. I saw there was some report yesterday also that you know, three children in Mpumalanga had lost bursaries as a result of this delay. Now, when I contacted the person who had said that, I said, can you tell me who these three learners are so that I can get hold of the people who were sponsoring and explain? Oh, no, they're not quite sure who these people are. Now, that sort of statement does not help. If we're going to make these kind of things, we need to say, this child, this child, this child did not get, and, you know, please follow them up, and we will certainly commit to doing that. So, Chair, I think those are the responses, perhaps just from DDG, the support for agricultural sciences here.
Thanks, Chair. I think this is certainly one mistake we made last year. We talked about how we provided support and teacher training for the big enrollment subject. We had mistakenly not anticipated that 85,000 would write the agriculture. So what we've done is we've already done an analysis, and it's important to do an analysis from two parts, two ways. In which provinces and in which districts is there poor performance? Because across the provinces, we have a pass rate that ranges from 43% to 78%. There are four provinces we have to concentrate on. And then the next thing is to do analysis of the paper and say, which are the new content areas, where did the learners do badly? Now, we've done both of those. And tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, the South African Agricultural Teachers Association meets for 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. They've invited the Landbou, Besigheids, Kamel, AgriCETA, Department of Agriculture. We will be there. And we're mapping out a plan for how do we develop teacher training programs. It will only be Saturdays and weekends. We're hoping that the Department of Agriculture and AgriCETA will help us. And then also we're going to put out many, many exam exemplars. So, Chair, this year we've only chosen four subjects where we didn't do well. We have to continue with our maths. physical science, accounting, and agricultural science. And those are the four subjects we're going to be giving real support. Perhaps the next time we meet on grades 12 or grade 10, 11, and 12, I'll be able to report back to you how this is going. But you can see that we're taking this very seriously.
Yeah, but somehow I think the irony, this method is so easy that they failed. Because if you look at the timetable, one of the main subjects that were failed is that mathematics. To me, I don't understand this. It's so easy that they failed. And in most schools, at this formula again, you find that some principals couldn't understand it. Because you go through the other subjects, they've done very well. Unfortunately, because they failed in math and science, the whole school is doomed. These are some of the realities on the ground. But thank you ever so much. I think we appreciate it. I think we have now a better understanding. Thank you. Sorry. I understand we have a sit-down lunch at the old assembly. We are all invited. We have two sets of minutes. I don't know, you're coming from constituents, whether you had time to read. Of the minutes of the 18th and 19th, did anybody read them or did you take them to the next meeting?
Yes, Chair.
You did read them?
I read them.
Yes.
I'd like to move the adoption.
Of both?
Of both.
Anybody else who did read them was ready to say second to that? Who is seconding on our honorable? Abandul. Thank you. Thank you ever so much. The lunch is starting at, is it already now? 12:30. The lunch is starting at 12:30 at Old Assembly.